How We Shop, the Habits and Motivations of Consumers. Hi, this is Grisha Day of BizGrowthNews.com, and I wanted to bring to you today a recording of a podcast that I first aired about a year ago in June 2009. It's an interview I did with Conor O'Neill of LouderVoice.com. Louder Voice is an Irish-based organisation where you can use their platform to integrate reviews seamlessly with your website. eConsultancy.com has recently published some information in terms of their reports about how we shop in 2010, the habits and motivations of consumers. A few things to note from that report in terms of the UK market. 3/4 of consumers aged 18 to 26 use recommendations on social sites to help them search products prior to purchase. And nearly 2/3 of consumers are using search engines to help them with their product research and decisions in terms of leading up to a purchase. The report goes on and talks about whether or not we post content online, specifically either a comment or a review about a product or a company. What is interesting to note is that of 18 to 26-year-olds, only 12% have never done that of the people who were researched by eConsultancy. That rises for the group of age 27 to 38-year-olds to 15%. And then the 39 to 54 and 55-year-old plus categories are 37% and 36%. That's really significant in terms of people looking to put reviews and write reviews on the web or social networking sites about your products and services. So I'm delighted to reintroduce to you a podcast that you may not have heard back in 2009 with Conor O'Neill of LouderVoice.com. You'll also find them on Twitter at LouderVoice, all about the importance of comments and reviews on your websites and blogs and social networks.
Conor, thank you so much for making time to talk to me today, and I'm really delighted to be talking about this really important area. And we will talk about Louder Voice, but I think because this is your area that you've really immersed yourself in for quite some time now, many years, let's look at some general trends that you're noticing here and elsewhere in the world, but particularly in terms of this idea that more and more websites are now starting to have ratings provided by customers and actually putting them on their sites in addition to regular testimonials. Tell us what's driving that change.
Good morning. There's a few things really happening around this, and I think it's all about, as you said, companies are being talked about. It's already happening, and equally, if they're not being talked about, there's a problem. But in general, if you're out there and if you're selling, if you have a product or if you've got a service, people are talking about it, and they're talking about it online. And more businesses want to take advantage of that. That, you know, what's the point of having all these people scattered all over the place talking about you and you not being able to benefit from that directly on your own site? And the research has shown over the past many years that by adding ratings and reviews to product sites, to service sites, to any type of business site, it serves two functions. The first is it obviously is a marketing function. There are, you know, new visitors to your site can see that others have been there, others are talking about your products, and others have opinions. But more importantly, it functions as a sales tool, because those ratings and reviews are a proven way of driving up sales on a site. I mean, there's tons and tons of research that shows, take a product page, add the ability to write reviews and display reviews on that product page, and you can increase conversions on your site by 20, 40, in some cases 100%, based on the approach taken. So that story is out there. People are hearing it, and people are saying, "Well, you know, I want a bit of that. I want a bit of that action." And then they start trying to see how they can actually do that. In terms of, I mean, you talked about testimonials and so on. I think that's that's been done for years. And the fundamental problem with testimonials is, well, there's a couple. I personally, and I know a lot of people, are wary of them because testimonials are always positive. You know, you get your 50 feedbacks from different people, and you put the 30 positive ones on as your testimonials. It's the businesses that allow the slight criticisms, the we loved you here, but you weren't fantastic here. The ones that have the confidence in their service and the confidence in their products to put those up, that's considered far more valuable, far more real, far more authentic, and therefore the customer trusting you goes way up, and that's been shown time and time again that by it's actually been shown that negative reviews and negative comment help sales because they add authenticity to the positive reviews and the positive comments.
Well, it's interesting you talk about testimonials as people being wary of them. It's interesting in terms of some of the workshops that I do, and I'll ask the question of, do we systematically ask for testimonials? Most people don't still. You would be surprised about how people even ask for feedback, because very often we're even wary about getting feedback. And then the other thing is, if we do have testimonials, you're right, some people will say, I'm not sure if I trust the testimonials on the site. Other people might even say, well, I don't know if I want to say who my clients are because my competition might want to come and go after those clients, particularly if it's a business-to-business world. And, you know, we have people who have joined our community here and listening to the podcast today who are actually part of a business-to-business, or they could be business-to-consumer. So I think there's even a nervousness in terms of putting testimonials on the site. So I know that we may be taking a step even further today, but I would encourage people to stick with us. You know, when you said that people actually are seeing a negative review, though, that can add authenticity. Tell us a little bit more about that, because there is a degree of nervousness, isn't there, about saying, what happens if I only get a star rating? And I'll take Amazon as an example. It's so interesting, isn't it, that we can go to places like Amazon and perhaps we're browsing for books, and we take note of feedback from people we haven't ever met. And I know that I'm influenced about buying a book based on not just the contents of it, because, you know, some books I've been buying recently, I haven't seen too many reviews about it elsewhere. They're brand new or they're just coming out. I want to get a hold of them because it's an area I'm interested in. There's maybe a few reviews there, but they're not all five-star ratings. So it does actually influence me in terms of when I read that, perhaps not a five-star review. But tell us a little bit more about that, because I think that people are very nervous about, you know, that not always being a positive comment.
It's actually of critical importance because it is the number one question we're asked. But interestingly enough, The data shows that it's not something that businesses should obsess about. I mean, they do need to address it, but they shouldn't obsess about it. The industry average, and I think we're there or slightly higher, but the industry average is that 80% of reviews are positive. People don't actually like writing negative stuff with their name or some sort of identifier beside it online. On top of that, where there's a sort of a five-star review system, again, industry average is 4.3 out of 5. And what that shows is that whilst people will look at, you know, the binary view, that obviously a one-star review is very negative compared to a five-star review, in general, what readers are more interested in is the qualitative aspect of the review. So if it's 3, 4, or 5, you're probably going to read the review, and you're more interested in what the person is saying, not whether they take 3, 4, or 5. And this has been shown time and time again that it's, we're interested in the opinion, we're interested in the information being given to us. So do we get a sense that this person who's writing this review is my kind of person? They've my kind of view. They have a similar skill set. So, for example, you'll often see, let's take take LCD TVs. I mean, you've got a massive range from dirt cheap, discount, bargain basement ones, all the way up to, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 euro LCD TV screens. But because based on the demographic you're in, you may be interested in the dirt cheap TV because it's going into, you know, the kids' room or something like that. And in that case, you're interested in the qualitative information, not that it's, well, with only 2 stars compared to the 4,000 euro LCD. So that's where people who are looking and reading reviews are interested. They're not obsessing on whether it's a 3-star, a 4-star, or a 5-star. And I think those being reviewed can sometimes be highly sensitive to those scorings, and they really shouldn't be. That's one aspect of it. But the other key aspect of the negative reviews is that they are a help in a couple of different. I'll give you a perfect example. One of our clients is Klipsch. They're a US, high-end US audio manufacturer. They do very expensive speakers, incredible headphones, and so on. Their products are so good, basically, they almost never get negative reviews on their site. But they have had a couple, and it was actually mainly around one product that had a problem. And it was a simple little problem, but it was still a problem all the same. But it resulted in two things. One was they were able to fix the problem in the next revision of the product. And so they got feedback they otherwise wouldn't have got. They wouldn't have known that this was an annoyance, this particular feature on this docking station. But equally, and this is something I thought was very interesting from a human, behavior aspect, about 2 or 3 people complained about this particular feature and knocked back from a 5 to a 4 or whatever in terms of scoring. So it wasn't huge, the drop down in scoring. But others came in to say, it's no big deal, this particular annoyance. So in fact, what you had was customers defending the brand against other customers because they felt, well, you know, you're overreacting to what's not a huge problem. So for any business that is a good business, that has good products and has a good service, but every once in a while has a problem, reviews and ratings are absolutely ideal. You know, on the other extreme, as we always say, we'll never get business from Ryanair.com. We're being facetious, but you know, companies that are really, really concerned with what their customers think and want to make the best possible product and deliver the best possible service are, you know, they're the type of people that are ideal for us as our clients and customers.
Well, let's just stay up with that for a moment. You just talked about Ryanair, and if people are outside of Ireland, they may not know that it's an airline which is very low cost, very no frills. They'll charge you even to put your bags on these days. But, you know, we use them because we know what we're going to get. We don't expect brilliant customer service, and you're right that they may not be a customer of yours in the near future anyway, Connor. But let's look at, you know, I mentioned Amazon as well, but what about smaller companies? Because, you know, just here in Ireland, 97% of the businesses are small and medium-sized enterprises. It's the same in North America, not quite so many, but also in the UK and other communities. You know, small businesses are starting up now. There's a lot more of them, and I expect more because of the current economy. Is the kind of idea of the review relevant for businesses that haven't necessarily got the scale? And tell us about, you know, we've talked about products there. What about service-related business? Because a lot of people are setting up service organizations now.
Yeah, it's interesting. When we built the service, the aim was always that we could provide service tiers so that it could address everything from a micro business being run out of a house all the way up to kind of enterprise scale customers. I mean, we really wanted to have something that suited everybody and provided something for any type of business, no matter what size. One of our recent launch clients was a company called Puddle Ducks here in Ireland. They sell outdoor clothing, mainly kids' outdoor rain gear, but also adult clothing as well, online. But they realized, they've done the research, they're very eager to make absolute use of whatever tools are out there in the social media space. They realized that ratings and reviews could do something for them. So they actually came to us and asked to, they became a very early user of our system. And, I mean, they're a perfect example. They are a micro business. They're a very successful micro business. They're a small company, as I said, selling these products online. And they're eager to know what people think of the products. And they were getting feedback already by email and so on, and people saying, and via, you know, comments on their blog posts and so on, but that really wasn't benefiting them on when it came to sales and getting that message at point of sale effectively. So they've implemented our system, and it's working incredibly well for them. I mean, the key to it, and I know we'll get onto it later, but the key to it is asking people. It's as simple as that. Ask people to give you feedback. Most people won't offer it unprompted, but if you ask them, most people will give you the feedback you ask for. But an interesting aspect of them, and we kind of rolls into what you're asking about service, is they effectively, there's two sides to it. There is reviews of the products themselves, so the individual raincoat or the individual waterproof trousers or whatever. They want those reviews on those pages, but they also want feedback on the service they're offering. You know, are they delivering quick enough? Is the site understandable? Can people find what they want? So the overall site and the overall service is also being reviewed, and they provide those reviews. And that's effectively a replacement for, we'll call them old-style testimonials, where you genuinely want to know what people think of your service and let other people know. Whilst the system was originally built for individual products and so on, there's absolutely nothing stopping it being used for service too. And also, for those who really are only dipping their toes in the water, the system can also be used just as private feedback. So this isn't content you are going to push online yet. It's simply a feedback loop and a feedback mechanism so that you can collate together and start analysing the types of feedback you're getting, and via whatever means. I mean, the way when we built our site, I mean, we originally built a consumer-facing site and then added the business service onto it. But when we did that, the aim was that people could get those reviews into us by whatever route they were most comfortable. So whether that's on our site, whether it was on a blog, on Twitter, or via SMS, we provided all these different routes to allow people to give feedback. So there's absolutely no issue with service-type businesses soliciting that feedback and making use of it, whether on their sites or, and I think this is an important one that can sometimes be forgotten, is taking, you know, what effectively can be called a multi-channel approach, which is you get feedback online, but if you also have a retail outlet, that you're using that feedback, for example, on shelves, snippets of comments and reviews that you've got of products, or if you're a service business, letting people know in the offline world, to give it a poor description, but in the normal world, what those online have thought of the service you're offering.
That's terrific. In fact, we're going to talk about that because I know that you've had experience with another company that I know of in terms of in the offline world. But you mentioned social media, and I know, in fact, you and I got to know each other through blogging, and I know that you're on Twitter and your business has a blog and so on. You know a lot about social media because you've, again, been immersed in this area. And, you know, whilst reviews aren't per se social media, they're certainly consumer-generated content. What about it when people may say, well, you know, I've seen a forum there and there's been a bad review, and perhaps they don't own the forum, and, you know, they've seen a review that's come up about their company, or perhaps they've actually seen somebody talking about them in Twitter because they're picking up the feedback through search.twitter.com, or perhaps they've seen a comment that's come up in a Google alert they've set up for their business, and they're not sure because there's a, let's say, an outburst from an unhappy customer or customers. When people have got, and let's say they haven't taken on board a service like yours or other similar services where they've got ratings, what's your tendency for advice there for them in terms of, gosh, I know there's some things that are going on and people aren't necessarily happy about it, or they've had this experience, should I engage or not? So, you know, outside of ratings, what do you think businesses should do when they see perhaps some commentary that is not as positive as they might like?
I think there's the general case, and then I'll talk about a specific case at the end, but in the general case, I'm 100% of the opinion that you have to engage. And we see it so often, particularly in Ireland, because, you know, we're not really, I meant to be honest, a mature online community, and businesses in particular are still really only getting kind of baby steps and learning how they should engage online. But my attitude is always, with any criticism, with any negativity about your brand or your service or your products, get in there and deal with it, but not, and I've seen it too often, not in an aggressive, defensive manner, which an awful lot of particularly small Irish companies tend to do, that you criticize them online and the response is, you're trying to damage my business, how dare you? And we've seen this, we've seen this many times, or they stick their heads in the sand and hope it goes away. What's interesting is, I think particularly this year, that is changing in a big way. I've been into a couple of companies recently where, I mean, in one case, a large telco, where they have been absolutely slaughtered online relentlessly by people because of poor service they've offered or bad customer service, unreliable product, and they have steadfastly ignored it for years, and they finally realized it's damaging their business. And they have sat down, and I was only talking to them a couple of weeks ago, they have sat down and they're putting a strategy in place for online engagement. They want to, and when I say deal with, I don't mean, you know, get rid of negativity. They want to deal with people and help all those people who are saying all those negative things about them, because at heart it's a good company with good products, and they have made mistakes. They want to fix them. They want to do better. And they now realize that when you know, if you Google their brand, all you're getting is negative commentary on forums and so on before you even get to their URL, which is completely the wrong way to be. I mean, if they had dealt with those issues a couple of years ago when it all started, they wouldn't have this problem now. And now they're having to kind of deal with it in retrospect. And I think particularly for small businesses, I actually did a test recently for a small voice over IP provider. I had a problem, had contacted customer service and found them incredibly rude and incredibly offhand, and I really didn't appreciate the way they responded. And I was very negative about them on Twitter, but I was very negative about them on Twitter on purpose, because I knew they had started engaging online via Twitter and so on in the previous week. And I was doing it as a test. And it sounds harsh, but I was actually doing it as a test. And unfortunately, they failed the test. At no point did they come back to me online and say, we're really sorry that you feel you got bad customer service and you feel we were too aggressive and so on. We're going to deal with it. They just ignored it. Which is completely the wrong thing to do. I mean, if all they had to do was say, literally, sorry, and most people like me, most normal, Irish, reasonable people, will say, that's grand, thanks. You know, somebody said sorry to me publicly, that's great. The one area where I do, and I was saying that there are some cases, the one area where I do, say that people should be cautious is, there are always trolls. There are always those whose aim in life is to have a go at you. They've taken against your business for whatever reason, and they will relentlessly badger you and criticize you online. And with those people, I think you need to be very, very careful, because you can end up in these very public flame wars with these type of characters. And really all they're doing is looking for attention. And in those cases, It's a tough one. You know, generally, what I've seen talking to a lot of other people who've encountered characters like this is, you try and take it offline as fast as you can. You try and contact them directly by whatever route and try and deal with it there, rather than these sort of public wars. And in fact, that's a good general comment as well, as long as you're not obviously infringing on their privacy. If there's a way you can contact those people outside of forums, outside of review sites and so on, and try and deal with whatever issue it is that they have, the problem will probably go away a lot quicker.
And certainly for those organizations who are listening and they've got a larger business, you probably have a PR or a communications team, and obviously engage with them. And sometimes you might even need to engage your legal team as well. But I guess there's a couple of things for me in terms of online reputation management. That's where bringing the conversation back onto your own real estate, so you don't have to have the, let's say, the debate on somebody else's site, and you can actually direct people back to that. I think it's also important that you're listening and finding out what people are saying about you. And it might be that, you know, I also know some companies, Connor, and you probably know them too, who would be very arrogant in terms of, you know, long-established brands. They think they know the way, and therefore, you know, the customer doesn't matter. In today's world, the customer does matter. And if we're looking to build reputation and manage our reputation and also grow that market share, then, you know, people will vote with their feet in a time when they've got more things that they've got to consider about before making that decision to buy your product.
I've actually been pleasantly surprised by some of those bigger brands who have that kind of traditional reputation as really not caring, and, you know, it's the, you know, the cheapest customer service they can offer, they will. I've been pleasantly surprised, and again, it's just the past 6 months, even they are realizing they can't do this anymore. They can't behave like that and keep their customer base and grow a new customer base, because if they see that their competition is engaging online and engaging better than them and in a more human way online, the competition's going to get the business and they won't. And even for the kind of the giant multinationals, the realization is finally coming on them that they have to do something about this. And that's why we're talking to them. I mean, they're literally, we're part of that strategy, that it's not a feature. And this is something that's really, really key, and we'll probably get onto it later, but reviews aren't a feature you add to your site. It's part of an online strategy as to how you engage with your clients and your customers.
Now, we're going to talk about Loudervoice in a little more detail for people, because I do think that the service that you've been doing and some of the innovations that I've seen over the last 18 months or so are terrific. And it's not always usual that we talk specifically about a product in our program here, but I do think that what you're doing is something that I really want to share with people, because of, you know, the whole mindset and how, as you said, it's actually part of your whole online communication strategy, is how you're looking to engage or encouraging people to look at this. But let's talk about, there are some sites that I've seen, and I'll pick one as an example, Get Satisfaction. I very often go onto a website and see that they've got things like crowdsourced help desks almost. And Get Satisfaction is a product that I've seen many, many large brands would use. You can find them online at getsatisfaction.com. And they use it to help manage customer support. So people might have a question, and then in fact it's not just the company who then respond, but in fact it almost becomes like a forum where other people, people who are using the services for the company who's using Get Satisfaction as a product, actually are also saying, oh, well, you'll also find it here, and so on. Tell us how Loudervoice differs from that approach.
It's an interesting question, because we see ourselves as being effectively in a different business from Get Satisfaction. We've made the very distinct decision that we're not in the customer service and customer support business. That's not the functionality and the area that we are trying to support. Because, and the main reason is, there's lots of great companies that already do that, including Get Satisfaction, User Voice, and other sites like that. And they do a very, very good job of it. And I think businesses need to very strongly separate customer support from reviews and ratings, because what can often happen, and I hate harping on about negative reviews, but what can happen with, let's say, that there's a negative review on a product, is it's not a negative review of the product, it's a negative review of the service that the person received, that the thing arrived late or it wasn't the right color and so on. And those reviews don't belong on product pages. They belong in customer support, and that's where those issues should be dealt with, because you're detracting from the products and the specific services you offer rather than your overall customer service. And in fact, we take that separation so strongly that we use Get Satisfaction. So they're our customer support system. We don't use Louder Voice to support Louder Voice. We use Get Satisfaction, and quite happily, I might add too. So that I think that's key. That if you start merging in those areas, you can end up with a lot of noise where what you really want is information. And particularly in a customer with crowdsourced customer support, an awful lot of it is how does this work? Well, it works like this, or how does that work? It works like this. That's really not much to do with reviews and ratings. It's highly complementary to it, but it really is a different business.
So tell us then how Louder Voice came about. You know, what was this vision, and what inspired you to create the service?
It came really from what we were doing as individuals ourselves. So what we did was kind of bring together a lot of personal and business interests in kind of one place. So we had a very strong background in what we call the kind of data mining, data analytics, and so on, and data aggregation. On one side, and then on the other side, very strong bloggers from the very early days. I started blogging in 2001, and realizing that a lot of what I was doing was review type content. I was reviewing movies, I was reviewing restaurants, and so on. And we really came to the realization that there was something in that. There was something in the idea that there was all of this. All of these reviews being written on different places around the web, and wouldn't it be great if we could somehow aggregate that content in and make it accessible to people so that those writing the reviews and writing the content got a bigger reputation online. So that's where the name came from. So it was to give a louder voice to reviewers. And so that was the core of it. And when we started off, it was quite niche. It was quite focused on technical people, mainly bloggers and so on. We very quickly added, when we saw the growth 2 years ago, which is interesting, the growth in Twitter. I mean, everybody talked about Twitter in 2009. We realized in 2007 that there was something special here. So in that case, people can write little mini reviews on Twitter, and we would aggregate them in and point people back to source. So it was very much about reputation building for reviewers. But what happened very quickly after we launched the service was we started having businesses come to us saying, it would be great if all these reviews that people are writing of me were available on my own site. And initially, well, it's not really our target. We're really more focused on the consumer and what they're saying. And businesses were made a very good point that it's a two-way street. I mean, you know, why have all this content that's giving reputation to reviewers when its other function is it can give reputation to businesses? Particularly, you know, there's so much great reviews, positive commentary about businesses out there, and they can't leverage it. So we basically decided to take the core of what we built, the core engine, and turn it into a B2B type service, so that businesses could take our technology and enable it on their own website, so that reviews, no matter where they came from, could become available on their site. And also, obviously, people could write reviews on the site themselves and float those reviews back to Louder Voice. So what it ended up really being was, as we say, reviews from anywhere to anywhere. So we see ourselves as very much a hub where reviews come in, and then they're made, use is made of them where they can best add value to whoever wants to take value from them. So that's what it's about.
Now, when you, as you said earlier, you're working with companies in the US, you're working with small businesses, you're also talking to very large organizations. Who do you think are the kind of organizations that would really get value from Louder Voice?
It really boils down to, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier on, it boils down to those who genuinely want to deliver great products and services and want to know how well they're doing to start with. So that your mindset has to be around wanting to deliver a better service and product. If that's not your mindset, it probably won't work for you because, as I said, it's not just a feature you bolt onto a site and you cross your fingers. I've seen many cases where, you know, somebody just does a business case analysis and it's, oh yes, ratings and reviews are a very positive thing to have on a site, let's implement that, and it doesn't work, that they don't get the reviews because they provide no motivation, no incentive for people to write those reviews because they're in no way reacting to them, they're in no way doing anything about anything that comes in. So there's no strategy there. It's just a feature in their mind. So it's really customer-centric, customer-focused businesses who at the same time want to make business use of reviews. So it's not just let's make better products and services, it's let's use those to sell more products and services because we're doing a good job and we want anybody who comes onto our site to see that our customers think we're doing a good job and we're selling good product. And where we're not selling good product, we want to fix it. We want to make it better. And you know, a perfect example. You know, one of our clients is a company called Bubble Brothers. They're a wine distributor. They, you know, for a business like them, if they get 10 bad reviews of a wine, there's an issue with the wine. And it saves them money at the end of the day that they're not reordering something which people fundamentally don't like. It also gives them an idea on things like, not necessarily for them who would have quite strong tracking, but for any business where you don't know whether it's 10 people buying one product or one person buying the same product 10 times if it's a consumable product. You can find out, based on the opinions, what that case is. I mean, what is the situation? And adjust what you're selling accordingly. So it's a very, very strong sales management tool for any business, really.
Now, tell us about, if I were a business and I've come to you and I said, okay, right, Connor, I'm up for this, and as you said, you know, I'm going to do something with the feedback. I'm not just going to have the feedback there and do nothing with it. I'm prepared to see this as part of my overall kind of how do I, you know, deliver even better customer service. What's the next step? You know, how does this work? And I know that on your site you talk about you've got white label reviews and so on. So tell us about the options that I have for putting this product onto my website.
I'll focus on the core. There's a lot of contextual stuff which we can get into in a while. But the core, there's two basic approaches that we offer. One is what's effectively a fully custom solution. Now that's more targeted at larger businesses that have in-house technical capability, and in that case, we provide a range of features from our system that they can literally program against to get the functionality they want on their site. What that gives is absolute control in terms of behavior, visuals, all of that sort of stuff is in the hands of the client site. It's all about being fully custom. The drawback is you need that technical capability. It's not something that you just can drop in. So that's on the one side. On the other side, we have what we call widgets, but they're effectively small snippets of code that can be added to any web page with the minimal technical knowledge. That then the phrase we use is review enables the page or review enables the site. So in other words, you say, right, on these product pages, I want to display any reviews of the products. And we give you one line of code which gets dropped on that web page and, you know, suddenly you have all of the reviews displayed of that product. On another page, you say, well, this is where we will invite people to come and write reviews. And a review entry form magically appears on the page, again with one or two lines of code. So the idea there is simplicity. There's minimal technical knowledge required. I mean, the implementation we did for the Bubble Brothers wine site was literally 5 minutes work. There's the template for the individual wine pages. Okay, we want the review to appear there. Copy, paste, save. Published a website, job done. They now had reviews on all their product pages. I mean, it was literally at that level. the only real downside there is you don't get 100% control and functionality because it's an off-the-shelf type solution. The main change that's done per client is obviously it's styled so that it blends perfectly in with the site so it doesn't look like it's come from somewhere else. But in terms of what it does and how it does it, we decide that. We've created what we think is the best compromise in terms of features and functionality for the most types of businesses. Interestingly enough, whilst that was originally designed for smaller businesses, smaller, less technical businesses, more and more of the clients we're talking to want to take that approach, even the bigger guys, because of the times we're in, that they don't have the time or the budget to spend doing big custom development, but they do want to make use of reviews. So they say, we'll take the widget. The widget does everything we need. Just style it so that it fits in our site, and that's suiting them. So it's what we thought would be the general kind of high end, mid end, low end approach. We've actually been slightly wrong about it. That this so called low end solution has turned out to be the general solution, and the high end one is really just for those who want that 100% control over what they're doing.
Now, what happens then in terms of me? I've got that on my site. It sounds like a very simple process. It's, let's say I've got a product. I'm going to make this up. It's a bunch of CDs. I'm thinking about this. I've just met somebody, in fact, this week, and they've been doing DVDs and CDs, and they've got a service business, but they've now productized it. And I could imagine that they could then take this code and put it onto their site. Now, once that is there, what happens then in terms of where do people make the review? Do they come to their site and make the review? And then what happens in terms of the data? So, for example, I saw somebody who's using your site, but you have to be logged in to use it. Is that always the way that a visitor to your site has to be logged in to use the service?
No, and that's where we get into that issue I was saying about control. So, for example, the guys in Puddle Ducks have taken the high-end solution because, for example, they needed the ability that it was their login system that was used to identify who's writing the review. So that makes total sense for their business. In the case of Bubble Brothers, there is no registration system. The widget simply says, what's your email address? And when you write your first review, it sends you a password. So from then on, you can log in with your email address and password. So all your reviews are associated with you rather than you being anonymous. But we cover the entire gamut. So you can even have entirely anonymous reviews where it just says enter a nickname and no identifier at all, simply because you want as many people as possible to review. You don't feel any urgent need to collect their email addresses and so on, or give them accounts on your system or anything like that. So we go from fully anonymous to fully identified at the other end, and it's all about the business case. I mean, and that's the key to it, is deciding what's right for your business. We're doing one for someone at the minute whereby yes, registration is needed. It's their registration. And at no point, it's pure white label, at no point will Louder Voice appear in your line of vision, that you don't know that we're providing the technology. We're purely a technology provider in that case. In most other cases, you know it's us. You know that we're the provider of the technology and the data is going back and forward to us as a user, and we make that very clear to you, particularly in the case where there's email addresses or identifiers involved. We have to be very, very clear on data protection. But depending on, in any of those cases, you, again, as a business, can decide, do I want anything to go live on my site, or do I want control? Most people want control, so it's a case of, as soon as the review is submitted, it just goes into a queue. And then you evaluate it and decide, yes or no, am I allowing this to be published or not? And you do that based on, and it's a critical part of the whole process for enabling reviews, is deciding what your policies are. So you have to decide, what am I allowing on my site, and you need to make that very clear so that whoever is doing the moderating, whether it's you, us, one of your employees, N of your employees, if you're a large business, what is the policy? Is it no bad language? You know, that's a common one. No abuse, no commentary, for example, on customer service. It has to be on product. You make those decisions, and then you apply those policies as the reviews come in. And it's a very, very simple management console. It's literally approve, withhold, spam. I mean, it's a very, very simple process, and that's the core of it. Reviews come in, you see they're there, and you approve the ones that fit in with the policy you have decided for yourself.
So let's stick with this person who I've met this week, who's got DVDs, CDs, and they've got them on their site. And let's say they're in the situation where they don't really want to have full white label. I do want to take on board feedback that I get from people. I do want to make sure that I'm easy to do business with, so I prefer not to have people have to register to leave a review. So I'd like them to be able to, you know, leave a comment there. But I do want to moderate it as well, and I'll have my policy. Is that available in your non-white label product? It could be as simple as that for me.
Totally. Basically, I mean, I don't want to go technical, but the little tiny block of code that you paste onto your site has a bunch of options on it. You decide what those options are: anonymous yes, no, email address yes, no, and so on. And it's literally like that. There's very little complexity there. It's you going, will I allow people to do that? Do I want their email address and so on? And then the only control we force at our end is you need to tell us whether you want those to go into a queue or not, because some people don't. Some people are happy. They're interested in volume of content because it mightn't, you know, for whatever they're doing. Let's say it's at a gig or an event or something where you don't have the time or resources that for potentially hundreds of reviews coming in. You really just want to see what as many people as possible are saying. So you turn off the moderation on the system, and everything that anybody says goes immediately live on the site. Now, you know, we don't have anybody doing that to date, but it's totally an option for those who want it.
So let's stick with this for a little bit then, Connor, because I'm trying to make it as practical as possible and as easy for people to understand how it could work on their system. So we're with this business. I've got that on my site. Now, it seems to me that having an email from the person might actually be a good option, because then if they leave her an email address and say, for example, they've had a problem, then I can get in touch with them about that. But take me through what I need to be careful of, because we don't want to be seen to be spamming people, and we need to be careful in terms of, as you mentioned, data protection. And I also would say that whilst I have that email address, I probably shouldn't then be putting them onto my newsletter list unless they've opted into that. So take me through what I need to be aware of if I go down this route of, yeah, I really would like their email address.
Yeah, it's a very important one, and it's the one we discuss a lot with our clients, that they need to be very, very clear. And again, in Ireland, we still have a tendency to be quite immature about a lot of this stuff. And, you know, this there is a sort of a general feeling, well, I have an email address, I can use it whatever way I like. And while you may stick within the strict letter of the law, you don't want to annoy people, and that's fundamentally what it's about. So from our side, a key aspect is, even if we are storing an email address as an identifier for you and have sent you a password, you will never be contacted by us again if your contacts came from one of our clients. I mean, that's just straight up. There's just no way that's going to happen. For our clients, though, They do need to be very, very careful and differentiate between where these various addresses are coming from. Interestingly enough, for those who are selling and delivering online, they all probably already have their client's email address. And in fact, what we recommend they do, and it's a very, very important aspect of getting success with reviews, is that about a week to 10 days after you ship, you email them and ask them to review. And that's the number one kind of thing that people do that gives them success in reviews is that simple, simple thing. Send them an email. And we have, to date, had no one complaining about getting that email. And it's sent by our clients, not sent by us. It simply says, I'd love if you tell us what you thought of the product you bought, and give them the link to the page where they, you know, they can write the review specifically for the product that they bought. That's proving highly successful for all our clients. Nobody has any issue with it. But if they don't, that's it. You know, you don't badger them again. You're not constantly contacting them again. Then, as far as people entering their email address to write a review in you know, from scratch, shall we say? Yes, I mean it really is a case. You can't be effectively badgering these people, but if somebody has written a negative review, my opinion is you should be contacting them. You know, a highly critical or highly inaccurate, which can happen as well, review, to just see if there's something you can do about it. And we would encourage, I mean, particularly with any negativity, if you have come to some agreement with your customer over that negative review. We don't believe in deleting. I mean, we're strongly against any sort of deletion of content like that, but that you put in a sort of a right to reply after it and say, you know, we have contacted the person, and we've sorted this out, and we're very sorry, and so on. So I would say common sense, but I think not just common sense applies here. I think a very strong sensitivity to people's feeling nowadays about basically getting pummeled with email is the best approach to take, and always err on the side of caution.
And of course, if somebody gives you an outstanding review, I might want to use their email address to say thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I mean, I know if I get a blog comment, I'll probably kind of do a reply on my blog. Or I get an email that comes in to me, or I get a message from somebody in LinkedIn who's been at one of my workshops or on Facebook, you know, I'll try and take the time to go back. And I'm a micro business, I think, but if somebody takes the time to give you some feedback, then, you know, build that in terms of engagement, in terms of continuing a conversation.
We see that a lot on our consumer-facing site, where people, they're not writing reviews on our clients' sites. They've just written a review of a business on our site, who made a business that's not a client of ours. And I love seeing that. I love seeing really positive reviews done of businesses, and then that business comes along and is highly appreciative of what the person has said, because you'll go back. I mean, it's one thing to write a nice review, but if you know that you know that they appreciate what you've said, it really, I think it's the icing on the cake for a review. I really do. And anybody who gets a positive review online should be in there like a shot, thanking the person. And I'm still shocked that we're here in sort of mid 2009. There's so many businesses that aren't tracking their business name on Google search, that aren't tracking their business name on Twitter. You know, you need to be tracking your business name and reacting whenever anything is said about it. Talking about reviews, we had a beautiful example. We launched an application for the new Google Android mobile platform. So this isn't available in Ireland yet, but it is available in the US, UK, and most of Europe at this stage. So it's a new range of phones by a wide range of manufacturers, all running the same software from Google. So we've built a mobile reviewing app for it. And we were very pleased with ourselves, and it's an extremely good application. About 2 or 3 hours after we released the application, suddenly we got a Google alert saying, mentioning the business we went, and somebody written this long blog post as a review, and done a 10-minute video reviewing our application. So reviewing the reviewer, and they loved it. They loved the app, and it was absolutely fantastic for us. And they gave us permission to reuse the video on our blog and so on. And that's what it's about. I mean, that's really for somebody says something nice about you, and you're straight in there thanking them. Just it's a great motivator for them and for you, and everybody benefits.
It's fantastic social proof, isn't it? You might know or think you know that you do have a great product or service, as in, you know, developing that app, but actually have somebody else rave about it. That's just, I mean, that's what we want, isn't it? We want word of mouth. We want word of mouth, so to speak, online. So.
And in fact, the person highlighted three small problems that we were able to fix. I mean, it's that as well. You know, we got every possible benefit that we got from that video review.
Now, one of the things that I was thinking about in terms of that widget that you talked about, if it is a piece of code, it seems to me that I could put that code on other places. So I could put it on my website. I could put it perhaps on my blog. What about on a Facebook page? Could I take that code for reviews and put it on a Facebook page?
Not right now, and it's an interesting one for us because we've been very cautious about Facebook. I mean, Facebook launched the ability to build applications back in, I suppose, it was mid-2007, and there was a bit of a gold rush for Evil Racing to build Facebook applications, and a lot of times they didn't work out. That there seems to be a very strong fall off in usage from the sort of top 20 or 30 applications on Facebook down to, you know, apps with 10 users and so on. So we held off on building a distinct application or a distinct widget that could be used as an application on Facebook just to see how things progressed. And in fact, we're glad we did because Facebook came out with what we think is a much more useful approach for businesses, and that's Facebook Connect. And this is the ability to allow people to interact on your site using their Facebook credentials, and more importantly, when they carry out certain activities, that those activities are posted to Facebook. And where obviously this becomes critical for us is that if someone uses our widget within the next that we're launching in the next 2 weeks, if somebody launches the next version of our or uses the next version of our widget on their website, a person can log on in our widget using their Facebook credentials. When they write the review of your product, it doesn't just appear on your site, it gets posted to their Facebook profile with a link back to your product page. So it's an incredibly powerful marketing tool. So every person, every friend of that person on Facebook then sees the review they wrote of your product or of your business with a link to your business. So we're very, very excited by that. I mean, I think Facebook is a game changer for so many businesses, and their ability to market in a really in an opt-in way. It's people actively saying, I like you so much, I'm actually going to say something about you that gets posted to my Facebook profile, rather than ads or you know, whatever else. So we think that's really, really important. And by the same token, we'll be offering the same functionality. We've always been able to pull reviews from Twitter. You can write reviews and we'll collect them. But the same idea that if somebody writes a review on your site, they can log in with their Twitter credentials, and a link to that review and to your product is posted to their Twitter timeline. So again, it's all about getting reviews from anywhere to anywhere, you know, get the reviews to where they want to be.
Fantastic. I mean, that's going to be available, what, to end of June 2009?
Yes. Yes, we're just finishing it off at the minute, and we just need to do a bit of testing, and then it'll be launched.
And just to explain that, just on, particularly on the Facebook example to people, in case they hadn't realised, let's take, for example, Connor had been on somebody's site, and let's say you'd gone to Puddle Ducks, and you'd bought a product at Puddle Ducks, and then you enabled it to, you know, kind of via Facebook. Because, you know, if Connor and I are connected on Facebook, what happens is when I go into my home page on Facebook, when I dial in there, and I connect in there, and I see what my friends have been up to on my homepage, and I see all this feed, I'll be able to see that Connor has actually, let's say, done a review on the Puddle Duck site, and there'll be a link there. And then actually, because I trust Connor, it's like, oh, what's he been up to now? Because I know he's always buying cool stuff when he's interested in things that I'm also interested in. I'm more likely to make that click through. So even if I wasn't a Puddle Ducks customer, it actually gets Puddle Ducks known by my connection with Connor, because he's done the review on their site. It's been posted to Facebook. It comes up into my homepage because it's in his feed. And then I'm a nosy person, so I go and see what he's been doing, and I get to find out about this cool site he's been on.
Yeah, and you know, we do some a reasonable amount of link tracking with links we post as people, you know, not as a business, and you'd be surprised. I mean, the percentage of people who are following you who will actually click on those links is quite high, simply because they are probably your friends. They're probably people who trust you and trust your opinion. So if they say Connor gave 5 stars to a Puddle Ducks rain gear, they go, bloody hell, it must be good. I'm going to have a look and see what that's all about.
Fantastic. Now, I also want to touch on something that I know that you were doing a little while ago, when you mentioned a company, Bubble Brothers, which is a wine merchant, a wine retailer, and they were doing some really interesting things where you mentioned earlier on, this doesn't have to be just offline, online, it can also be offline. And I know that you were doing things with neck collars, which I thought was interesting, that in the stores they had neck collars, and they were encouraging people to send reviews in about the wine. So to tell us a little bit about how that might work, and also for businesses that might have a retail outlet.
Yeah, we're really pleased with this because it's worked on so many levels. It's really surprising. So the basic idea is we have SMS integration into our system, so our clients can have a dedicated SMS keyword. So, and you know, with Bubble Brothers, it could be Bubble Brothers, or wine for Puddle Ducks, it could be Puddle Ducks, and so on. And the idea is that people can write reviews of those products using SMS, with the aim being that they're doing it either, you know, at the point, not necessarily the point of purchase, but the point of drinking, if it's wine, when they're out and about, or equally, and this is an important one, and particularly I would think older people as well, is people who aren't comfortable online but still want to have their say. So the idea here is in Bubble Brothers, they have this wide range of wines, really very, very unique wines. They also distribute around Ireland. They hang these wine collars on the bottles that basically say, tell us what you think of this wine, and with full instructions on what the person has to do to SMS in a review of that wine. And the feedback they've got from people has been fantastic. And interestingly enough, it's not a huge percentage of people who want to write the reviews, but the feedback they get is they love being asked. They love that here is a business selling them a product, and the first thing that they see on the product is, tell us what you think of this product. And that it's an incredible kind of brand-building tool for them. It really gives people a nice feeling about the company. Their bottles stand out on the shelves as well, because there you go with this pretty, we did the initial design, pretty garish collars that basically shouting out from the shelf, you know, buy this and tell us what you think of it. But equally important, there is something that's offline. There is somebody sitting at a table with their phone SMSing in, this is a phenomenal Pinot Grigio, and I'll give it, you know, 5 out of 10. That review then can float over to that product page on the Bubble Brothers site. So they're getting the full feedback loop from shop, shelf, phone, and to online, and then potentially driving sales of that product online as well. So it's worked out beautifully for us. Their sales guys love it because all the feedback they're getting on it. It's very easy to do. People like doing it because it is so easy. I mean, it's literally sending a text message to a number. There's no more to it than that. It's, as I said, yeah, we've been really pleased to how it's worked out for us.
I'm just thinking there, Connor, about a hotel I was at, and I've never mentioned the name of it because I don't try to impact negatively on people's reputations. But there was one of the most expensive hotels. I was gifted a room there with my family. I went there over a year ago, and they gave me this long brochure at the end in terms of to fill it in terms of my feedback. And I didn't have a fantastic stay there. It was very, very, very expensive. I was glad I wasn't paying. I spent a lot of time doing that review. I've yet to hear about anything back from them a year and a half later. How interesting would it have been when I actually got my key to actually have a little message there to say, tell us what you think of us, and with an SMS review, then they might actually may have taken some action. I could see that applying in so many different places. And, you know, here in Ireland, we've got 120-odd% penetration of mobile phones. There are other places in the world where, as you said, you know, perhaps people aren't connected with or very, you know, kind of comfortable necessarily online, but they do have a mobile phone. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because we're currently talking to an Indian company, and they about enabling our reviews on a site that they've done, and that was their comment to us. Really, well, it kind of threw us, because it was the point, you know, well, there's 500 million middle class people in India, and you know, nearly everybody has four phones.
Yeah.
But most of them aren't smartphones and feature phones. Most of them are kind of low end phones, and texting is huge. And so there's an area where people will be buying, and they can give feedback by sending an SMS. It'll be a no-brainer for them. It's easy to do. It's easy to understand. And the volume is just enormous. So,
well, I mean, I think there, Africa and other places in Asia,
yeah.
I was just immediately thinking of that, because I used to live and work in Asia as well. But, you know, people will have a mobile phone very often these days, but they may not have a computer at home. They may still be using internet cafes, even if they're in, as you know, some people might call them a middle class. Besides, it was just a different economy. I think that's fantastic in terms of, I'm expecting to hear lots of fantastic international growth for you on that whole application. Now, tell us then, in terms of as we're wrapping up here today, let's say, you know, we've installed Lada Voice, perhaps we've got SMS, perhaps we've got, you know, the Facebook Connect in a month's time, or perhaps we've got the widget that's there. Tell us five things that we should do then next, in terms of, particularly in terms of, we've now enabled it. How do we get the message out about it? How do we encourage people to do reviews? You know, what would be four or five things that you think we should have next in our communications plan once Lada Voice is enabled on our site?
Well, I think, and I said it near the start there, it has to be part of an overall strategy that you're taking. And I'm not talking specifically about us, reviews in general don't work if you just, you know, treat them as a feature. You throw them on a page and you hope people write reviews of movies or whatever. It simply doesn't work. You have to be thinking about where this fits in how you're doing things. The critical one, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, the absolute critical one is that you ask people to review. It's such a simple thing, but it works incredibly well. I mean, when we launched with the Klipsch guys, they weren't doing that. And they were getting very, very small number of reviews as a result. The second they started sending that email, then the volume went through the roof. And they were all positive reviews, as I said. So they were delighted by it. So that's a key one. But it is actually a case of getting the message out. So if you are engaging in other ways, if you are using Twitter and Facebook and so on, you need to be shouting from the rooftops that you're doing this and would love people. You really want to know what people think of what you're doing and the products and so on. But the other really great benefit, and we see this quite a bit, is you don't just do the review on your site, that you do push them elsewhere. So if you've got a Facebook fan page, push, you know, you've got that phenomenal review of product X, push it to your Facebook fan page so more people can see it. Push it onto Twitter. Push it onto your blog. I mean, we even had, there was a review of a smoked salmon company called Umara, phenomenal review done of their product, and they immediately pushed that review over onto their blog. They were delighted with it. So it's valuable content. It's valuable opinion about you. So get it out there. Get the message out that you're doing this.
So when you say push it, you mean just take the content that people have written and then post that onto Twitter, or post it onto your Facebook page, or post it onto your blog, or is there something else we should be doing?
You can do it manually, but we provide facilities in terms of RSS feeds and so on, so that you can automate the whole thing. I mean, if you wanted to push every review or every review of a particular topic, all that functionality is available there. But yeah, a lot of it is take you know, I think we sometimes forget that the old-fashioned stuff works well too. That you know, whether it's old-fashioned email newsletters. You know, again, we've some of our clients, particularly at launch time, immediately get a newsletter saying, "Look, we're doing this now. If you've bought from us in the past, come back." and write a review and tell us what you think, so that you're not just, it's not just a forward-looking thing, you're also getting any of your existing customers. We've also had it with a site we're going live with fairly soon, where they put the facility in place, but they want to do baby steps, which makes total sense. You don't kind of do a kind of a big bang approach. You do it in baby steps. They are basically inviting people in that they know, still to write honest and truthful reviews, but to get the feedback on the fact that they're doing it at all. So they're trying just to see, well, what do people think? What do people think of how we're doing it? Are we being too aggressive, not aggressive enough? All of those things you really should be doing. So don't, as I said, the fatal flaw is simply to say, cut and paste a piece of code, we're done, you know, on to the next project. It simply won't work. And, you know, you'll have the disappointment. There's a particular case I'm thinking of, a particular media company who took that approach recently. They weren't using our solution, they were using another solution. And I'm sure their opinion is now that reviews and ratings don't work because they've so few of them, rather than thinking, well, maybe we went about this the wrong way. Maybe we should have looked at this from a strategic point of view, and how we deal with visitors to our site.
And, you know, some people still have brochures and still have other offline marketing materials. I could imagine that, you know, you could put, you know, see what customers have said. Let's say you have a catalogue, because I know some people still have catalogues for their businesses, and you could put it onto other marketing literature. You could put it on postcards if you were going to market with postcards. We had a great show a few weeks ago with somebody about that, and you'll find it over at bizgrowthliveshow.com. You might put it onto, let's say, the literature that goes out when you send the packaging out. I've even seen people put reviews on their invoices.
Totally. And actually, that's another one that people do is literally, I mean, to encourage people to review is that they ship a flyer in with the product saying, tell us what you think. And that can work very well for SMS. So you're not even asking the person to go back to the site. You're just saying, here, you've got it now. Send us a text. Interesting one on the brochures. There is a strong push, and you'll see it a lot in the US now, to take that multi-channel approach, that someone writes a review of your product online and then in store you're showing some sample reviews saying, look what people online thought of this product. They really like it. They're giving it an average of 5 stars. And that's an interesting one, that the loop is going back to the traditional world, and they're leveraging all of that content that's online. And I think it's really cool, in fact, that, so, you know, people who are walking in can suddenly say, oh, wait a second, you know, 10 people thought this was a 5-star product. Well, that's good enough for me. Another key bit of that actually is this idea of top-rated is very, very important. We're going to be making some widgets available in the next week or so that enable that functionality. And that's just simply the idea that it's not, here's what we think are our 5 best products. It's here's what all our customers think are our 5 best products. And if you put those either on your front page or on every page, every product page, you know, these are our top 5 products. It's been shown that sales of those products can double by simply doing that, because people trust what other buyers are saying. So that can be a really powerful tool for businesses.
And of course, as we talked about earlier on, if somebody gives you a great review and you've got their email address, perhaps you go back and say thanks. And of course, if you've got a situation where areas could be improved, the other piece is then to make sure you do something with that really useful and helpful data that you've had from customers. Just as, Connor, you were talking about, that you've got some feedback on your iPhone, on your Google phone application, which you can go back and then fix and change, because somebody's taken the time to give you that feedback that perhaps you might not have come across, because you know, you're so close to it, and even with the best one in the world and all the testing and beta testing and so on, somebody else's eyes looking at it could give you a different perspective.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's also the, you know, I never thought people would use it like that. I mean, that's the classic scenario that the more people who are looking at what you're doing, you know, the more problems they're going to find and the better you can make it. I mean, that's always my attitude with things.
And so, I mean, I've really thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today. I hope it's given people some confidence to think about ratings in another way. We've given you some examples of companies, and, you know, you can find them online. And I mean, I would also encourage people to go over to loudervoice.com and have a look at the website there. But Connor, give us some other ways that we can get in contact with you. So, you know, are you on Facebook that we should be connecting there for Louder Voice, or on Twitter? Where would you like to see people connect with you? And also, how best to get to know more about it in terms of perhaps taking the next step and looking at what would that mean in terms of the investment to put it into their businesses?
Yeah, I mean, the all of the above, I suppose. I think that the step-off point should be loudervoice.com. We have a big logo there for the business service, and that lists the types of functionality we offer. That has all our kind of traditional contact details in terms of phone numbers and so on. On Twitter, we're loudervoice. If you search for loudervoice on Facebook, you'll find us there as well. So, you know, all and any of the above. In terms of, you know, looking at budgets and so on, as I said, we offer the service from micro-businesses to enterprise on a tiered basis. The core functionality is very, very powerful on its own, and then it's just more bells and whistles and more services and more, I suppose, human assistance as the pricing levels go up. But the core functionality is affordable by micro businesses, and can get them what they need to get started. I mean, that's the way we want to enable everybody, basically.
And it doesn't matter where you are in the world. We've heard today that whether you actually are in a community that really doesn't have lots of online, but people have got mobile phones, and you want to gather their feedback, then that's fantastic. If you're a one-person company, you've got a service or a product, and you really are serious about getting feedback and are serious about being a great business for people to do business with, then it's for you. And if you're a large organization and you're looking for an enterprise solution, then I'd really encourage you to get in contact with Connor and his team over at Louder Voice. So just remember, that's loudervoice.com, and we've been in conversation today with Connor O'Neill, who's the CEO of Louder Voice. Fantastic, and thank you for the rich information there. And I do, as I said before, hope it's encouraged people to think a little differently in terms of how to use ratings. I know I've got a list that I've been writing here on the side of my desk to think about, we should be doing that for that business and that business and that business. So I hope, Connor, that you get lots of contacts from people and that your team are able to support them. I'm sure it sounds like they've got a solution for everyone. I always talk about being niche, these, you know, but saying that, I think you've got a solution that could really work for any business in terms of if they're serious about getting feedback and ratings from their customers. And as we tune out to the show now, just listen out for how to get in contact with us. I would also encourage you that if you wish to do so, you could give us a rating if you've enjoyed the show here today, particularly over at iTunes, where you'll also find us. Just search for BizGrowth Live. And, you know, all of the people who we have here as guests on the show make the show available because they're gifting their time. And if you've enjoyed the show and if you enjoyed what Connor has had to say, perhaps go over to Louder Voice and give them a review themselves there. Or alternatively, as I mentioned, go over to iTunes and you can rate the show there.
So I do hope you found that interview with Connor of value. Just coming back to the e-consultancy report, which you'll be able to find online, the report about the US market indicated that more than half, that's 55% of consumers, reported that a product with high rating will increase their likelihood of purchasing. So I hope that's given you some food for thought. You can, of course, reach the Louder Voice organisation at loudervoice.com. And if you've got questions for me about the podcast, you can reach me at bizgrowthnews.com. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/marketingmentor, or, of course, on facebook.com/bizgrowthmedia if you're specifically looking for Facebook marketing tips.